the show where we're all awake. We're all awake together. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. If you'd be so kind as to cruise into the VinnieEastwoodShow.com on a regular basis and check out the archives. I mean, we've been going for, I think we're about one week away from our 2-year anniversary show. There is a heck of a lot of guests that we've interviewed in that time. Some of them multiple times, some of them only once, some of them have been on radio thousands of times, some of them have never been on radio before. It's because we set the bar real low here, and basically if anybody requests to come on at any point, I'll get them on. I don't care whether I agree with them or not. Just bring them on. Okay, so ladies and gentlemen, if you ever feel upset with me or because I've had a particular guest on or anything like that, just be upset with yourself because you're the one with the problem. I'm just sitting here listening. Right, my very special guest today, who we've only got for 1 hour because of her other family commitments and what have you, Devi Kidd from Devi.com. That's DEVY.com. Devi, welcome to the program.
Hi, Vinny.
Now, we haven't had you on for quite some time. What have you been up to?
What haven't I been up to? Mostly my fight against the smart meter here in the state of Texas. A real war going on.
Yeah. Hopefully you haven't got enough. Have you got enough EMP grenades to throw at these things or what?
Well, the tragic part is that one of my dearest friends, who is also the attorney for myself, my husband, and 190 petitioners, he passed away June the 4th unexpectedly. So at the moment, we don't have legal counsel. So I'm on the hunt again. And it's not easy because the three biggest cities in the state, Houston, Austin, and Dallas, most of the attorneys that deal in administrative law, which is about as exciting as watching sand on the beach, they're what is called conflicted out, which means that they represent utility companies, and so if conflict of interest, they can't represent us. So it's been a tough this last week, but Public Utilities Commission is ready to issue another, and I'm sure it's going to be a denial towards the end of the month, and then we'll have to go to state district court. But I also sent them notice yesterday that Texas Administrative Code, we are entitled. They see they don't want us to have the hearing. They do not want public hearings because we're bringing the best experts in the world to testify as how dangerous those things are. And we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars in losses for the utility companies because we want them banned. At some point later in the summer, because I'm also looking for a law firm that specializes in class action lawsuits, to sue the utility companies, the PUC commissioners as individuals, and the makers of those smart meters under the product consumer safety laws because they're so dangerous. People are suffering. Their health is just people, some of them that are really, really sensitive to non-ionizing radiation, their lives are being destroyed because their health is being destroyed.
It is that serious?
Yes. Smart meters are extremely dangerous to humans, animals, and the environment.
So it is basically they're like, what? Here's the agenda here. Let's put something that's incredibly dangerous and poisonous in a particular area. I likened it to, you know those things that you can buy off of late-night infomercial TV, those things that you plug in the wall and it sends out this this kind of low-frequency sound that you can't hear, but rats and cockroaches can, and they stay the hell out of your house?
Well, what happened was years ago, and this all comes from Agenda 21, the sustainability by the global elites. This is directly tied to Agenda 21, but the geniuses in Washington, I call them prostitutes actually, in our Congress, there's a lot of money involved in this. And they passed some federal law that these were a great kind of new technology and America's power grid. And our power grid, probably like most countries, is very vulnerable to attack. And it's aging. You know, there's never any money for the states to take care of what needs to be taken care of. Because, I was just, before we went on the air, reading about how much in debt our state is and for state pensions. But in any event, then Obama signed a bill to give $4.3 billion, all borrowed because our treasury is $16 trillion bucks in the hole, $4.3 billion to the utility companies throughout the states, encouraging them to put a smart meter on every house, every commercial property, every hospital in the country, because this smart grid that is being upgraded and built across the United States is worthless unless you have half of a billion of those smart meters plugged into this smart grid. And they've already, they, meaning utility companies, already invested over $1 trillion, expected to go to $10 trillion by the time they're finished. All that will be flushed down the tubes. If we get those things banned in Texas, it'll spread across the United States. So we're talking huge money.
Well, you're talking about huge resistance to what you want then, isn't it? Because if somebody's, if basically, you're threatening a gangster's bottom line here. They don't play by rules, do they, Debbie?
No, well, it's, but the problem for the utility companies is, how are you going to find a jury of 12 people if every single person has one of those meters and most people are suffering some kind of reaction? There's an organization of physicians, and these are the top line. I mean, these people are so smart, I'm dumb. They now are educating doctors across the country to deal with electromagnetic sensitivity that people are suffering as a result of all of this electromagnetic non-ionizing radiation from cell phones to cell towers and now to these smart meters. And they're now going to try to force them on you for your water meters. And it's just unbelievable. But the science...
Are there any effects on, say, reproductive organs or anything like that?
Yes. And there's a guy named a doctor. His name's Zori Glaser. This guy has, like, 4 decades of experience in electromagnetic radiation. He set up the Navy labs to study this stuff decades ago. And he wrote a paper about it, how it affects your heart. And very badly, but also, I'm trying to remember which one of our witnesses, if it's Barry Trower. One of our witnesses is going to testify by phone from London because I can't afford to fly him over here. Barry Trower. That man worked for the military for England, Great Britain, setting up and researching electromagnetic radiation for over 35 years. And he will testify to the fact that it does alter DNA. It does have an effect on reproduction. I mean, this is so overwhelming.
Does that mean you're becoming increasingly sterilized, or does it mean DNA will become disrupted and therefore your babies will be deformed, or is it all of the above?
Well, I think it's all of the above, because in one of my articles I linked to a video that was taken in Italy. See, this is worldwide. It's not just the United States. The global elites, this is all Agenda 21, sustainable energy, all of that jazz. But this was a video taken over in Italy, and it had to do with the cell towers all around these farmers. And I can't explain it as good as these experts can, but the pulsing of this radiation does affect DNA. And it was heartbreaking because these farmers are seeing mutation in their farm animals, rabbits with 1 foot, horses with 5 legs, and all kinds of deformities. Here in the United States, up in Wisconsin, which is dairy land, farmers are finding that whole herds of their cattle are less and less milk, or won't give it, or are not producing any milk at all. And they're surrounded by cell towers and now these cell phone smart meters on homes all around.
It's funny you should mention that for the livestock being affected by this electromagnetic non-ionizing radiation, because the guys at Blue Shield, they created a miniaturized version on a collar for cows, and some of the preliminary tests of these creatures walking around and just being protected by these Blue Shields, which stop all that kind of crap from getting at them, they actually had, I think, something like a 10% increase in milk. So I think that really actually kind of matches with what you're saying, that they have a decrease in milk when they're surrounded by the radiation.
Well, the people that have the brains to understand all this, we are going to get our hearings. If I have to go all the way to the Texas Supreme Court, we're going to get our hearings. But the exhibits that we're going to submit, these are experts not just here in the United States, but all over. There's a professor at the Hebrew University in Jerusalem, and he talks all about how bad they are, and he said that all of this could have been avoided if the utility companies around the world had used fiber optics, because there's no known ill effect to humans whatsoever. But fiber optics are very expensive. One of our expert witnesses is going to testify by telephone, Dr. Samuel Milham. He wrote it's a fairly short book, but he was one of the first people to ever write about the electrification of civilization and the spike in cancers like leukemia all around the world. One of our expert witnesses, we are going to fly in from British Columbia, Canada, Curtis Bennett. He's testified in front of the Canadian Parliament. His expertise in the field has to do with liability, with these smart meters on places like hospitals, generating all of this non-ionizing radiation. Because one of the things that a lot of people don't know, but of course here we're making it known in the state of Texas, is something called net meshing. And what that means is that, say you have a housing development in a high-dense population area like Houston or Los Angeles or New York. Let's say that you have 500 houses. Those 500 meters are talking to one central meter there, and they're squirting this radiation thousands of times a day. It goes right through your house. See, I don't have a smart meter on my house. They tried to force it on me last July, and that's when I got involved with hiring my good friend as an attorney and going after the PUC, because I have wood fences with locks on them, and they couldn't get on my property. But the PUC here is in trouble, because the author of the bill that the utility companies use here in Texas to force those meters on you, HB 2129. This has all gotten to be such a big war that the author of that bill, Representative Dennis Bonin, actually wrote a letter to those public utility commissioners in Austin, our capital, and he said, look, I wrote that bill. It was never intended to force those meters on people, and I am alarmed at the degree to which the TDSP, the transmission service providers, they're the ones who install the equipment.
Sounds like somebody who got used by the elite for his position and then betrayed later on.
Well, the bottom line is that the people have been forced to have these meters against their wishes, which is in violation of the law that was actually passed. That's what makes the utility companies guilty of fraud, and we're going to take them to the mat in this state. They're not going to get away with it. So when you ask me what I've been doing, I actually just got back from California, too. I was gone a couple of weeks. So my mommy turns 85 in September, and she lives in Northern California, and she's a widow. So I went out to see her, stayed there for a week. See mommy.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's in the times when you're trying to save your country, you sometimes you have to be reminded of just who you're trying to save as well. Your family, your friends, your cities, your counties, and all of that kind of stuff. And as far as I'm concerned, the global elite have this big plan, and it's all encompassing. It's everything. Okay, so smart meters are just one part of the big overall plan, but they're one integral part. Cell phone towers are another integral part. And as far as I've seen, the eugenics agenda is against the ordinary person. Basically, anybody who currently does not have corrupted DNA is capable of critical thinking, or is capable of feeling emotions or a conscience of things of that nature. This is something the elite do not want to exist in humanity. They want us either robotic slaves, or they want us sick and dead.
That's very true, and I have great concern, because they put one on my mom's house, and California has adopted a, quote, opt-out, where you can have the utility company remove it, but they charge you $75, plus you get dinged for $14 a month for the rest of your life after that. But one of the dangerous parts about smart meters is, and we know this to be fact because it's happened over and over and over, is it shuts off pacemakers. It shuts off automatic insulin pumps. My husband uses a machine at night to breathe. He can, and when they threaten to turn off my power with no notice, that's when I called my friend, who passed away, who's an attorney. And state law says that they cannot do that if there's a disabled person in the home.
That
and
happened
so,
here in New Zealand, Debbie. There was a contractor from Mercury Energy who switched off a family in South Auckland's power supply, and she had a breather just like your husband does, and she actually died.
Well, we got a letter from John's doctor and Tommy Cryer, God bless his soul, got it to Encore. So for the moment, I'm quote safe, but. It doesn't matter. I'm surrounded by all of this stuff. And for the last year, I've had real problems sleeping and getting massive headaches. Because on the other... we'll pick it up on the other side.
Yeah, we will. Speaking of massive headaches, ladies and gentlemen, the Vinnie Eastwood show will return in about 3 or 4 minutes or so. So enjoy the advertisements. I do. And we'll be right back with Debbie Kitt from Debbie.com.
Living so don't care about the color of your face. Unite and roll, respect our right to live here on the land. It's Tino Ranga, Tino Tonga, we don't own the banks. The parliament does so where do you have a stand? They paying their bills off your back with hefty tax demands. Misleading our youth with alcohol, TV contrabands. So kids end up and disturb our community.
Listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. We have the job here at the Vinnie Eastwood Show little studio and at GorillaMedia.co.nz and the YouTube channel Mr. News Guerrilla Media to talk about the things that the media doesn't talk about, because when the media won't do their job, and anybody who thinks they are currently doing their job is insane! You just got to do it for them, basically, because they're just no longer relevant. And I'm acting under the assumption Debbie agrees with me. Debbie, welcome back.
Thank you, and yes, I do agree.
The
media in this country and around the world, they are so controlled, and they have their own agendas that they have disgraced their own profession.
And speaking of disgracing your own profession, you talked about the politicians being prostitutes, and I tried to come up with a word play there. So they're either politutes or they're prostitutions. Which one do you think?
Oh, I think prostitution is great.
Prostitution, okay.
Because it's true. The United States Congress is the biggest brothel on the face of the earth. I mean,
and guess what? It's not the people that go into the brothel that get screwed. It's all of us that stay outside.
Well, here in the United States, that body of individuals have gone so far away from the founding documents and our legal form of government that the people that we no longer matter. It's their agenda, and unfortunately, the American people, like in I'm sure in other countries, too many of them simply don't care. You know, they're either on drugs or booze or whatever. And now our unemployment is running 26%. I mean, 26 million unemployed in this country. It is horrific what's going on. And you can place the blame right at the Congress. I hear all this stuff all the time about Obama and the economy. Obama, a sitting president under our Constitution, doesn't have anything to do with the economy directly. The federal government is not supposed to create jobs. We are a free market country here. And I hear, well, Obama this. I tried to say, look, the blame goes to the people, the 535 crooks, cowards, and criminals in our Congress. All bills of expenditure must originate in the House of Representatives. They're the ones that hold the people's purse. And yet, we're still paying for trillions of dollars in unconstitutional cabinets, agencies, things like foreign aid, and absurd spending. Because
speaking of absurd spending and the Constitution, One of the things we did want to bring you on here today to talk about, Devi, was Ron Paul, and allegedly he's kind of done a little bit of a back wazoo or something like that, and he's up supporting Mitt Romney.
Well, before I get to that, can I just say one thing real quick, Vinny?
Go for it. For,
about the smart meter. If your listening audience goes to my website, it's D like Delta, E like Echo, V like Victoria, another V like Victoria, and a Y like Yankee, DEVVY.com, you'll see a smart meter. If you click on that, my four columns are there. They're very comprehensive, especially the first one. It has dozens of links to scientific evidence. One of them deals with privacy issues. One of them deals with smart meters do not save any money. As a matter of fact, people are finding that their utility bills are doubling and tripling, and people are hot all over this country about it. So for the folks who really want to understand how dangerous these things are and fight back, if you, like I said, go to my website and click on the meter. Now, Ron Paul, for all intents and purposes, has thrown in the towel, I guess. His son endorsed Mitt Romney, and that the backlash has been tremendous. I mean, people feel very, very betrayed.
Well, look at it this way. You build up your entire reputation on saying that the establishment are a bunch of crooks, and then you say, support the establishment. I mean, no wonder people are ticked off.
Well, I guess there's two schools of thought. One is that he's doing it to feather his political nest to run for the presidency in 2016. Other people say that he did it because he wants to maybe a vice presidential ticket in the making, and that would be able to allow Ron Paul to further bring his father's 40 years of work into the Republican Party, his ideas, his message. So
I got a third one.
Huh?
I got a third one.
Oh, wait, okay.
He may have been threatened and given an offer he can't refuse.
Well, I have an answer. I have a comment about that because, quite frankly, I'm sick of hearing that as an excuse. When Ross Perot ran for president in 1992, allegedly there was a threat to his family. Well, you know what? Ross Perot had enough money to hire an army. He's a billionaire to take care of him and his family.
Do you know where Ross Perot lives now, Debbie?
If anybody gets threatened, that's the time when you call a press conference. You don't need to tell the press what it's about. You stand there on the Capitol steps. There's Fox News. There's CNN there. And then you say, I call this press conference because I've been threatened. Do you get that? My family's been threatened about running. But whatever the threat is, you expose the threat. You put it out there. But just remaining silent and compromising your values, the threats just, if they're there, they'll just continue. You have to expose it to the world. I have had very serious death threats against my life, you know, and there's been times when I open the mail, you know, here's your license plate number and telling me what I wore on a certain day, and I'm going to find my brains blasted all over the sidewalk. About 2 months ago, I got an email from a guy who sent me the Urgle Google Earth map. My dogs in the backyard. I could see my dogs, and this guy said, "You're next." Okay, all right.
Well, see, and you know what the strange thing is, Devi? The people who are going to kill you won't tell you that they're going to kill you.
But if you're a member of Congress and you get those kind of threats, don't or the Supreme Court, don't remain silent. Tell the world about it. Expose it. Then if something happens to you, there'll be a big investigation and not just, well, he died of natural causes or, you know. But to me, I'm tired. I think I have read so much history in the last 21 years that I've been an activist. And look at Nathan Hale. He was a hero of the Revolutionary War. He was 21 years old when they hung him, the British. He was betrayed by his own. But if we can't live in fear if we're ever going to conquer our enemies. And when you look back and think of the odds that those who took participated in the Revolutionary War, it was horrendous, tremendous. And yet, I'm sure in their hearts, a lot of them were afraid, but they did what they had to do because the call of freedom beat so fiercely in their hearts that they were willing to do whatever had to be done. You know,
well,
so
it comes to the point where you realize that your life is not just your life, that you, having been given the gift of life, it errs a responsibility upon you. And some people will take that responsibility very seriously and think, you know what, I'm one person, but I can make a difference. I can serve other people. And I think that's probably the highest calling that any of us can really be pulled across, is just to not serve ourselves, but take responsibility to serve others. And this whole political game with the prostitutions and what have you, what has happened is that a lot of them go in naively thinking that they can actually do some good, that they can actually make positive changes, only to find out that through government induction ceremonies, by the laws and legal things that they're restrained from doing anything good, but allowed to do things that are illegal and immoral.
And too many of them become legends in their own mind. They're the most, probably among the most powerful in the world. I mean, every country likes to think that they're government officials are, you know, powerful people, and but we're a very large country in size, and the U.S. Congress is, I think, the largest lawmaking body in the world. But it just isn't an excuse to me. And but you're right. There was a woman named Linda Smith from the state of Washington, and this was about 25 years ago. She was the first person ever elected to the U.S. Congress on a write-in, because she couldn't win a primary as a Republican. So she made history. She won the election on a write-in. She went to Washington, and she quit after the first two-year term because she said that she couldn't get anything done. She was hounded 5 or 6 hours a day to raise more money for the next election, raise money for the party. She said there was no time to read bills. It was the standard practice for legislation to be read by staffers, which we don't elect. And she said, I'm up against 400 plus other people. She said, I'm not going to kill myself over this. Goodbye.
But I think it's like another part about it. You're given the gift of life and you realize, hey, it's my life. I get to do what I want with it. I can sacrifice it if I want. And there are things that are more important than being alive. For example, the future generations being able to survive. And nowadays, and this comes back to the smart meter, as I always say, in the end, everything comes back to the beginning. These people want to kill all of us, okay? So if you think that your life, anybody listening to this radio show right now, if you think your life is so valuable that that you shouldn't sacrifice it in order to secure the survival of future generations, think again. Trust me. There is no more important time in the entirety of history than right now to devote your life to defeating evil and the New World Order scumbaggery, okay? There's no other point where it's this poignant and this important, okay? And soon, you won't have a choice because your life will be taken from you. You won't even be allowed to use what little energy that you have left to fight back. You'll simply be exterminated in a FEMA camp.
That's true, and you know, I get all this email from people all the time. I can't read all of them because I get about 20,000 emails a month. But oh, DV, it's time to leave the United States, and I don't have time to answer them. But I just think, and just where do you think you're going to go? Do you not understand the words "one world government, one world order"? That means these global elites have every intention of conquering the world by force, if necessary, to bring everybody in line under whatever agenda, communitarian philosophy, communism, fascism doesn't last very long. But so where do you think you're going to go? There isn't a country on this earth that is safe as long as these evil people are holding the reins. And they want us dead.
Enough.
My mother's considered a useless eater because she'll be 85 in September. She doesn't, according to these global elites, people like my mom, they don't contribute anything to society. They take away, and so they're expendable. But the only people that are going to
have they also have, under Obamacare, the ability to euthanize our elders and even kill babies before the age of 18 months, claiming that neither if you're younger than 18 months or older than, 75 years or something, you're no longer human, and so you're allowed to be killed by the doctors or something like that. It was just horrific.
We call it the death panels in Obamacare. But it goes right in lockstep with the eugenics program. The only people who benefit from smart meters are the utility companies and the medical industry. And these
I don't think so, because all of those utility workers are going to have smart meters on their homes. All of those medical doctors are going to have smart meters on their hospitals. They're going to die too. It's the thing. You get used by the New World Order to fulfill the agenda, and you think that you're benefiting by money or something like that, but the reality is they're killing you too.
We're all being killed off and suffering. That Dr. Samuel Milham, that I mentioned earlier, his book, The Electrification of Civilization, is so powerful, and it's backed up by facts. It's not something, you know, just his opinion off the cuff. And cancer is a, you know, multi-billion dollar industry in this country. And we're all going to suffer the effects of all of this technology that is so dangerous to humans. And it's not just humans. There's a website, I forget what it's called, but it's devoted to people who have pets. One lady, she was literally, you could feel her tears in her post. She said, I'm looking for somebody to help me. She said, they put a smart meter on my house. And she said her dog has been barking and running in circles for months. She said the vet doesn't know what's wrong with him. And I said, I know what's wrong with your dog. You got a smart meter sitting right outside the window.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Does that mean smart meters drive people nuts as well?
One of the biggest problems...
Has there been any cases of people who have gone crazy soon after smart meters have been installed in their homes? Like they're unable to control their temper or impulse control or things like that? The similar things that we see with reactions to, say, things like Prozac and Zoloft and what have you.
That I honestly can't save any, but I can tell you that I've saved these emails because I print them out and I send them to my state rep. You know, here, take a look at this. Here's a person who's had ringing in their ears for 4 months since they put the smart meter on their house. These people say they're going insane because they can't sleep and their ears won't stop ringing and the doctors can't do anything.
You know what? A lack of sleep will drive you insane a lot faster than most other things. And if these smart meters are making people sleepless, it's no wonder that the pharmaceutical industry's profits are going to go up, because everybody will come and ask for sleeping pills, won't they? You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show. Debbie Kidd is my guest. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
I stand alone against your mad, deadly, worldwide, conspiratorial, gangster, computer god communism with wall-to-wall, deadly gangster protection, lifelong sworn conspirators, murder, incorporated, organized crime, the police and judges, the deadly, sneak parroting, puppet gangsters using all the
darkest 2 hours of talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, where it's all about deadly, gangster, computer god communism coming through your nice picket fence, installing a smart meter, corrupting your DNA, producing a ringing in your ears, madness in your dogs, sleepless nights, and, of course, profits for the scumbags who did it to you. And the scumbags who were bribed to pass legislation to make doing this to you a legal thing.
Let's not forget about the houses here in Texas that have caught on fire in the middle of the night or the middle of the afternoon, right after a smart meter has been installed. We've had several cases of that. Thankfully, nobody's died.
That's called getting burn notice.
And let's not forget about the privacy issue. Your data, at least here in the United States, is being sold to third parties. This is wireless, and crooks can drive up and down the street, and they can pick up the data that's being mined by the utility companies. So they know when you're in the house, if you're on vacation because you're not using any power. The utility companies know everything that you're doing, and they also have the power, no pun intended, to turn off appliances, besides charging prime dollars. These smart meters are nothing more than wireless or warrantless wire tapping of your entire life inside your home. It's one of the most horrific things that's being forced on humanity that I can think of.
Yeah. Well, it's when you feel that there's no escape, right? That's when you know that things are really, really bad. And incidentally, we were talking about Ross Perot earlier, and those of you in New Zealand who don't know who Ross Perot is, there was a time in the United States when there was things called manufacturing inside the United States, where people actually had jobs, where they actually built things, where there was actually this thing called American Made, and then there was this thing that came along called, partnership agreements, economic communities, etc. The person who was pushing this big NAFTA economic community idea in the United States was the vice president at the time, Al Gorski, who convinced everybody that offshoring all of your work, having no manufacturing base and leaving everybody unemployed, was a brilliant idea. Ross Perot was running against him and saying, there will be a sucking sound the like of which have never been seen, and all of those jobs in the United States and the things that once made our country great will be gone and they won't return. He was right. And guess where he lives now, Debbie? He lives in New Zealand.
I didn't know that. But in the first 2 years after NAFTA was passed by a lame duck Congress, 4,700 factories in this country closed. 4,700 in just the first 2 years.
See? And that's part of the globalist agenda, to destroy the United States and everybody's independence, more specifically. Okay, because independence means you don't need anybody else, okay? Interdependence means your country is being led into dependence. Once you're dependent on somebody, you cannot break away from them, because to break away means you will destroy yourself, okay? It's like, for instance, if you were being on the government benefit roll or whatever, food stamps. What happens if you say, you know what, I want to be independent, I don't want your food stamps? Boom, your food stamps are gone, you got no food, you starve. And that's what's happening to the U.S. economy. That's what is happening to all of our economies. That's what all these Trans-Pacific, this new Trans-Pacific Partnership, Devi, I'm sure you're probably aware of this, that's what that's about too. Except instead of just fracking over the United States with it, they're going to frack over New Zealand, Japan, and Brazil, and Peru, and the United States, again, all together. Like, it's like, let's all join hands and be shafted together.
That's Bill Clinton was famous for pushing. He many times said that we are entering the era of interdependence with other nations. And I thought, this country has become a nation of damn fools with their not listening to what he's saying. But of course, with the dumbing down of the school systems and things like texting, you know, where the younger, the last couple of generations, they can't even speak a coherent sentence, much less write one. And you know, people aren't listening. They're just foolish out there, and we are on the cliff. It's very, very bad, the position we find ourselves in.
But even a fool knows what a cliff looks like and what will happen if he falls off it. If he's blindfolded, on the other hand, and being led by a Pied Piper-type mofo, he won't see anything, and he will fall off that cliff. And I think it's part of our job now, Devi, as the people who are awake, the people who have our blindfolds removed, to remove as many blindfolds off other people as humanly possible.
Yes, that's why I've been at this for 21 years. And I always get a lot of, flack from people that support free trade for, quote, cheap goods. Because I say, look, I don't want cheap goods from communist China. And I want you to go back and think before NAFTA, because it was the key turning point. You are supporting communism every time you buy something made in communist China. The United States, prior to NAFTA, was a fair trade country. We traded with countries around the world for centuries. I mean, I buy this particular cream from a company in New Zealand. I like their cream for my arms and stuff, so I actually buy products from other countries. I don't have a problem with trade with fellow humans on this earth, but I have a real problem with this thing called free trade, because it has been so destructive to my country and other countries. You know,
I say the word free translates as slave, so instead of free trade, it's slave trade.
It is.
That's
essentially
what's happening.
You can get cheap at Walmart. We call it China Mart. But do you actually know what those people over in China, how they live, that work in the factories that make the cheap junk that comes out of there? They use child labor over there. And they really are slave labor. I wrote a story maybe 4 or 5 years ago about this woman named Xu Fen. She was in communist China. And this has to do with abortion. But she worked for a soap company. And they found out that she was pregnant for the second time, and they hauled her in front of the court. And she was about 8 months pregnant, and the judge told her that if you abort this child, you can have your job back. So she did, which is murder. And then she was brought back in front of the court, and she wanted to know when she could go back to work because her family was, you know, her husband didn't make enough money. The judge said, no, you're going to a re-education camp for 18 months. And they took her off, shaved her head, put her in a blue uniform, and that's where she spent the next 18 months getting re-educated about government policy.
Do you know what re-education is based on? It's based on the Communist Manifesto, allegedly, uh-huh. That anybody who thinks communism is a bad idea obviously is not in their right mind and is completely insane, because, you know, if you don't support communism and giving up all your rights and being part of a global fascist dictatorship or whatever, then you just must be out of your mind, you poor dear thing. So we're going to send you to a nice place where you're going to have trauma-based mind control that will convince you, utterly convince you, that communism is a brilliant idea and that you were wrong this whole time. That's what it's about. And this whole thing about you got to blame China, you got to blame everything or whatever. When I was a salesman for a big telco here, I was trying to sell the landlines and internet to this guy who was a toy importer here in New Zealand. And I talked to him about, you know, what do you think about all these lead paint on the toys? This was a big story here in New Zealand a while ago. A whole bunch of major retailers and chains and whatnot had found that a lot of the toys that they were selling our children had been painted with lead paint. And he said, well, you know what's interesting about that is it wasn't the Chinese who did that. Specifically, it was actually in the specific instructions from Mattel that they had to use lead paint via their specifications, which were, at the time, was actually more expensive than the other paint that they were using. So these companies literally use everybody as a scapegoat as well as a henchman at the same time. It's brilliantly scumbaggery.
Yeah, it's really horrible. It seems like every other week the FDA here puts out an alert for dog food made in communist China that's harmful, that has all kinds of bad stuff in it, besides toys. I remember when, it was probably about two Christmases ago, there was a big recall for toys from communist China. I forget who the toy maker was, Mattel, that had the date rape drug actually in the paint on these drugs. Or toys.
Oh, hypno in the paint.
Yeah, and I thought, that can't be by accident.
There's no way.
Yeah, that's right.
Well
I have an old newspaper.
We've come to the end of this hour. Come to the end of this hour now.
Yeah, it was fast.
So it was. I mean, you can stay on for another 20 minutes if you want to do one more segment.
I can't. My husband has to eat at a certain time, Vinny.
Okay. Well, you've got responsibilities. We all do. So thank you very much for taking responsibility for the safety of your countrymen and your country, and mine too, really, because I think we're all in this together now. Devy.com is the website, DEVVY.
Hopefully I'll be back on.
Yeah, please do come back on, because I noticed that there's a donate button for your legal battle against the smart meters, and I want to encourage people to give Devy a donation here, because the difficulty is, when you're dealing with the legal system and all of that kind of stuff, it can be very, 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 very costly. And that's the reason why the system does that, is so the ordinary person who spends their life, instead of screwing over the rest of the world and keeping all the wealth for themselves, the best people on earth will be the ones who are relatively penniless but have all the time in the world to devote to saving others' lives. And they need your support in order to keep doing their job. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show after the break. Fastest 2 hours in talk radio.
Mm-hmm.
And the caller lines are now open, everybody. 218-339-8525. Just got off with the lovely Devi Kidd from Devi.com. And I want to reiterate, please go to her website if you have a spare few bucks or anything like that to donate to her legal case against these smart meters because, basically, they'll come to you. If you don't stop them right now, okay, and that's as far as I'm concerned. Oh, DV, sorry, it's pronounced DV, kid. All right. So, if you want to go home, and she's also done a lot of videos, so you can go home and watch DV. I'm terrible with the lame puns. Sorry, everybody. Probably lost about half my listenership with that joke. Okay. Dr. Green, this is a bit of a New Zealand news, ladies and gentlemen. Dr. Green from The Danctory is out. I just had a quick conversation with him over the break. He's a bit exhausted at the moment, so he won't be coming on the show today. But we have a whole hour at the moment for people to ring in and talk about whatever you want to talk about, your smart meters, etc. But I wanted to just switch gears a little bit and talk about Dr. Green and the cannabis debacle. Now, those of you unfamiliar with Dr. Green, he's about 62 years old now. He just came out of a two-year stint in prison. Last time I saw him in person, I think, was in 2010. That was when, in my earlier days of activism, where I was helping out a lot of the cannabis community, doing videos for them, things like that. So if you ever want to have a look at some of my earlier activism videos and things of that nature, you can go to my my first YouTube channel that I started out called Eastwood Vincent. That's the name of the channel, Eastwood Vincent, and search Danctory on that channel, Daktory, and you'll come up with an awful lot of videos. I did a lot of work for those guys, and the Danctory itself is something set up by Dr. Green and a couple of friends. It's a big factory, basically, in Newland, not just down the road from me, and the idea was to have a place to keep Mary Jane. Mary Jane is the name of their bus that was built in part with volunteers, donations, and, of course, the continued support of New Zealand's National Organisation for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, NORML, and the Hemp Shop, which former parliamentarian Nandal Tanchos and longtime cannabis campaigner Chris Fowley own and run. And this factory that they've gotten here, they've now rebranded the factory. They've painted it up with the green and the red and the yellow and the Rastafarian colours. It's at least, I don't know, 8 meters tall. 8 meters tall, completely painted front of a big machine shop called the Dactory, right across the thing. Sticks out like dogs' thingies. And basically, what's most interesting about this is that they've been running for close to 2 years before the first cop even showed up. And it was after they'd received a good stint of publicity. And this is another thing that the Dactory's managed to accomplish more than any other cannabis activism in New Zealand's history, okay? Per minute of activism, or per hour, per day, per year, whatever denomination you want to call it into, they have received more media attention in total, okay, in the 3-4 years that they've been open, than the entire cannabis movement in the whole of New Zealand's history has gone off of the mainstream media. Okay, that is how big and important this operation was. And they had a big picture, okay, on the front of a local rag here, the West Auckland Times, I think it's called. Can't quite recall the name exactly, but it had Dr. Green in front of the Dactory holding a rather large bud. And of course, next day, the cops rolled round after the journalist went to them and said, look, these guys are committing crimes. They're openly smoking cannabis and everything. Why aren't you doing anything about it? So on the word of that journalist, the police got a search warrant, came in, arrested Dr. Green and a number of other activists, and he just got out of jail today from that arrest that happened over 2 and a bit years ago. And what's going to happen now, I'm not sure, because I'm acting under the assumption that Dr. Green will be arrested soon for continuing to be an activist, and will probably wind up spending another stint in jail. And this is what's happening to everybody. They're being punished for having a conscience. Because we can see that what the government is doing is wrong. We can see that cannabis laws don't make any sense. Okay? And the number is 218-339-8525. For those of you calling in New Zealand, you want to put a 001 in front of that one. So it's 001-218-339-8525. And those of you in the chat room who want to ring in, go for your life. And what I was thinking is just how much of a similarity we find with all activist movements, okay? The mainstream truth is a lie, and the real truth is somewhere up here, way above people's heads, and they have no idea. And every time you go out and you protest and you talk about this truth and you try to convince people of it, you will have two, what was it? Sorry, I lost my train of thought there. Basically, the laws are based on a lie. And so what happens is anybody enforcing those laws that are based on lies lie in order to enforce those laws. Okay? And I'm not talking about, oh, the law's a lie, so though anything you say is automatically a lie. I'm talking about literally, okay? The laws are a lie, and you have to BS people, make up evidence, make evidence disappear, be corrupt, and lie in court many, many times in order to ensure that these laws are enforced, okay? And this is incredibly, incredibly prolific within the New Zealand cannabis law enforcement community. A man named Paddy O'Brien, who was one of the top inside, you know, deep undercover police, who was surveilling gangs and criminal activity and all of that kind of stuff within the cannabis trade, was smoking, and he was breaking the law, and all of that kind of stuff. And he said and admitted that he had to lie, and he was instructed to lie about his state in the case of witnessing all of these crimes of drug dealing and what have you. Because if you're under the influence of drugs, okay, your testimony becomes moot. It doesn't matter. You're on drugs, okay? Sorry, we can't count your testimony as credible. So his prosecuting officers, head guys and what have you, told him to lie and say that you were perfectly sober. There was nothing else going on. So 100-plus people were convicted based upon the lies that one officer was told to tell by his superiors. And that's only one guy who had the conscience to come out and tell the truth. So you can imagine, multiply that. One cop manages to wrongly convict 100 people based on his lies. One cop. That's one really good cop, by the way, who's really good at doing his job, who's really good at lying, who gets taught specifically how to lie, gets taught what the warning signs are for lying, so you can spot other people. If people are nervous, if they're touching their face, for instance, dead giveaway. Okay? So if you ever get pulled over and you're smoking or anything like that, you shouldn't be smoking and driving, by the way, but under no circumstances should your hands come up anywhere near your face, because there's a dead giveaway. You'll get busted. Okay? They see it, boom, instantly they become suspicious, and then you're screwed. Okay? And this is part of the advice that was given out, and this is the good part about the cannabis laws. Okay? They can be shattered in the minds of police very simply. Okay? My favorite example of this is Bill Cooper. Oh, no, not Bill Cooper. Barry Cooper. Barry Cooper. Yeah. From NeverGetBusted.com. He was like the top cop of the United States, the equivalent to the Paddy O'Brien here in New Zealand, using all the lies, being the best at lying and getting copious quantities of convictions all over the place, commendations up to wazoo. And then one stoner tells him, did you know that cannabis has never killed a single person in 10,000 years of recorded use? And Barry's like, really? My God. And goes and researches it. Sure enough, it's true. Not one person has ever died solely from the consumption of cannabis. Ever. It's not possible. In order to die from a tetrahydrocannabinol overdose, the active ingredients in cannabis known as THC, you need to smoke like a pound in 30 minutes. A pound! It's not possible. Even if you were trying to eat that much, your stomach is not big enough to hold it, okay? If you were trying to smoke that much, you would be asleep long before you could even approach the limits, okay? That's what happens. That's why this drug is so dangerous, because it makes people happy and sleepy and hungry. Oh, my God. This is incredibly dangerous. Jeepers, creepers. Can you imagine what would happen if everybody was happy and maybe just a little bit sleepy and a bit hungry or everything like that? Society as we know it would collapse. People wouldn't be stressed out and attacking each other all the time for absolutely no reason. There'd be huge food shortages at Domino's. You know, it would just be the most horrible, terrible thing. And that's acting under the assumption that every single person who does not want cannabis or whatsoever instantly is convinced otherwise if a law changes. It's like, dude, come on. There is ignorance out there about cannabis beyond belief. And you think that just by making it legal, any single one of those idiotic, moronic, brainwashed, dipshite Muslim, hardworking, I hate everybody who isn't me because I'm the best person in this entire world. Anybody who uses drugs that I don't use is an evil, Satan-worshipping communist. Okay, those kind of people. You think any of them are going to be convinced that cannabis is a good idea if the government says, well, it's legal now? No, they're still going to be just as ignorant. They're still going to be just as angry, and they're still going to refuse to use it. Okay? It's because they're not ready to be convinced. They don't want to be. And I'm acting under the assumption that, according to every single time when cannabis laws have been relaxed, the usage among the general population, even among people who already use cannabis, drops dramatically. Dramatically. I mean, what's another one here? The Netherlands. The Netherlands. When they relaxed their cannabis laws, okay, they had about 1 in 8 people, I think, between 10 and 20% of the population were illegally using marijuana. After the laws were relaxed and people were capable of coming into coffee shops, purchasing set amounts for set prices, were capable of carrying things legally, up to 1 ounce for personal possession, that kind of jazz. Okay, it's a legally, lawfully regulated, intelligent market. Okay, two things happened, and there's a very interesting consequences, and it really underlines what the failure of the law is to do. Number one. The amount of people who were smoking cannabis in the Netherlands population went from 1 in 8 to 1 in 21. Okay? Less than half of those who continued to smoke cannabis, around a third, basically, of those who were smoking cannabis continued. And two-thirds of them stopped. Isn't that interesting? They're no longer doing an illegal activity. It's no longer cost prohibitive. There's no longer any fear of arrest or search or seizure or warrants or growing in your own house or anything of that nature. And yet the usage drops dramatically. Why? Why? Why did that happen? Here's what happens when you've got an illegal substance that is worth money. First of all, organized crime gets involved. Secondly, children get involved. Thirdly, relationships are based upon that illegal activity continue as long as that activity remains illegal. If you're a stoner, you will notice that all of your best friends are also stoners, aren't they? And you know why that is? It's because the only people that you can do your illegal activity with are other people who are doing the exact same illegal activity as you. And you'd realize that if you took that illegal activity out of the mix, you don't have anything in common with those so-called friends, do you? When I was arrested at the age of 19, I had like 2 dozen, 3 dozen people who I called my friends, you know, who were coming around to my place while I was selling them weed and everything like that and having sessions with them and talking to them, having great conversations. You know how many of those people ever saw me again? Not one. Because it's a fake social situation based upon the illegality of your activity. It's not a real relationship. And that's the reason why, by and large, people in the Netherlands stretched out. Because they realized, hey, I don't have to be confined to only have stoners as friends if I want to smoke weed. I'm going to start to have different friends and different social groups. That's exactly what happened. Okay? So anybody who thinks that if you legalize pot, everybody's going to suddenly start being a stoner, there is no evidence to support that claim whatsoever, and is a fear-mongering technique by the scumbaggery filth who think that enforcing lies with more lies on top of more lies plus some lies to back them up too is a brilliant idea to honestly help society. They're insane, and they're stupid, and you shouldn't listen to them, and you shouldn't, under any circumstances, think that the cannabis thing is irrelevant. We'll be right back after the break.
On December 16th, 1961, the world turned upside down, then inside out, and I was born screaming in America. It was the tail end of the American
show.
Dream.
That's my little
just
hero
before we
hooks
lost
there.
Our innocence irrevocably.
We're talking about cannabis, and earlier on the show we were talking about smart meters, and this is another thing that I want to kind of get across to people as well, is that I do not have a speciality, all right? No subject is my crux amoebus or whatever Latin word that intelligent people use to describe stuff. Okay, I don't have a focus. All I do is talk about whatever is in front of me. So we have a caller on the line here. Area code 649. What is your first name and state you're calling from, please?
My name is Bart and I'm calling from Alabama.
Oh, yeah. And what
I want to ask, I got two comments, and I got a question for you, Vincent. My comment
is... You're from
New Zealand, aren't you? My comment is to you, why don't the people of the world stand up and use the networks of the globalism to fight corruption and greed together.
You know what? It's because uniting people is remarkably difficult. Because you need the only people who are capable of uniting people, as far as I've seen throughout history, are those with exceptional leadership qualities. Number one, you need to be an incredible orator. You need to be able to make people feel as you feel with your words, without touching them, without meeting them. They can feel that they know you. That kind of leadership quality breeds familiarity and trust. Sun Tzu, there was a portion in The Art of War where the wife of one of his soldiers and the mother, and she was also a mother of one of his other soldiers, broke down in tears this one time. The reason why she broke down in tears is because the first time she saw Sun Tzu, the general, get down by one of his injured troops who had been poisoned, and by himself, as the leader of the army, suck the poison out of this man's leg, that man who he saved devoted himself entirely to serving his leader because his leader saved his life. She then, when the same thing happened to her son, burst into tears because she then knew that she would never see either her husband or her son ever again and that they would die serving the general, right? That is a leadership quality when you are really willing to be down here with your troops. Alexander the Great was the same. There was an incident when they were walking through a giant desert. And everybody said it's impossible to cross this desert. Not possible, right? And he was given a helmet full of water. All of the troops, all the way down the line, they were all marching in single file through this giant desert. All the way down the line, some of his lieutenants had gone and collected small donations of water from each soldier to give to Alexander. Alexander stopped the entire column of people, and he looked back at them, and he said, if I am not on the same plane as you guys, basically the summary of what he said, then I'm not really your leader. And he tipped the helmet of water out to show that he was willing to suffer just as much as the troops were suffering. Okay, so there's the two leadership qualities. It's about being on the ground there with you. Uniting others behind you, on the other hand, is slightly different than just having plain leadership quality. You also need to have tactique, all right? Tactic is about manipulation and deception, essentially. All war is deception, and as far as I'm concerned, we are currently in a war, and this war encompasses all of us. We're all soldiers, whether or not we like it. In fact, I think the word conscript is actually closer to what I feel I am, because I don't feel that I've been given a choice. Like, I've been kind of forced into it via my experiences witnessing scumbaggery and so on and so forth. I don't feel like I have much of a choice. When you're uniting people behind you, you usually need a 9/11 event of some description to either A, make people incredibly afraid and follow you out of being afraid of the other possible consequences, or B, you need to accomplish an enormous victory with very little resources and very little technology and very little power. And what that does is it serves as an example to show other people who might be would-be warriors or wishing to join the fight. It gives them the bolstered confidence. And this was proved to great effect when what's his name? William Wallace of Scotland and the Battle of Stirling. I'm sure you've seen the movie where they use those giant spears against heavy cavalry kind of thing, and they took them all out. They also laid oil and things in the middle of the battlefield and set it off with flames and what have you. Superior tactics with minimal technology deployed with precise timing is the way to win battles. And when you win, you also win more and more support, because people back winners, don't they? If we are the winners, if the leaders of the truth movement are the winners, and I feel that we are, because we've consistently proven that we're far more credible than the mainstream media, far more intelligent, and far more caring and far more deserving of support than any of the current establishments that we enjoy today. That's what I feel the truth movement is. But uniting people, on the other hand, particularly uniting other forms of leaders, is very, very difficult indeed, because you're talking about big personalities. Every big personality is a big personality because they themselves are confident in themselves, confident in their own abilities. And what happens then is that you become increasingly sensitive. Like, it's ironic, the relationship that oversensitivity has with self-confidence, don't you think? Because I will, say, have been doing this work for, say, 4 years and doing the radio and done all this great stuff, right? And so I feel very self-confident. But if somebody comes and insults me or says that I shouldn't be doing this, or that I'm causing harm to the truth movement, or that I'm wasting my life, or I'm pathetic, or something of that nature, when they haven't done anything near as close to what I've done, it signifies this great sensitivity and this offense and this anger and this rage. And that happens when big truthers talk about other big truthers, either behind their back or in front of their face or whatever, and it starts these what they call patriot wars. I think there's a website dedicated to this, where it shows all these different patriots who really, really hate each other, right, or really do, and all the bad stuff that they've all done. Now, be that as it may, the founding fathers, and in the end everything comes back to the beginning, Bart, and being from Alabama, hopefully you'll comprehend this, that the founding fathers all hated each other, right? They really did. However, they understood that their personal feelings had to be put aside, otherwise they would never be free. If we are capable of overthrowing the New World Order, freeing the United States from the grip of the globalists and New Zealand and all of our nations, that will be the only way to do it, I see, is if we all come together and we know exactly what we're fighting for. That was the thing, and you have an informed population behind them. The Revolutionary War, I think, is probably one of the most important lessons of history, how you can get educated people who have money, power, tactique, leadership qualities all together, as well as an advanced propaganda network of people handing out leaflets and flyers, thanks to the help of the new printing presses at the time. They also had a garnered support from the population around them. I see the truth movement as almost exactly identical in its scope and ability as the founding fathers. And I think that's a very encouraging aspect, because, hey, you have a look at the truthers and you have a look at the slaves and the politicians and what have you, and you realize us in the truth movement, we're a lot smarter. We've got better tactics. Every single time that these people tell a lie or do something that's not true or purported on the media, we always disprove them, discount them, and destroy their lies in minutes these days. This is the power we now have. And that's with people not united at all. So you can imagine just how much stronger, how much more unbreakable the entire truth movement would be if we realized that, okay, I'll admit it, I hate other people in the truth movement, but that doesn't matter, because regardless of how upset I am with other people, I know for a fact that those other people aren't actually going to pick up guns and come and kill me and try and take my liberties away from me. The New World Order, on the other hand, definitely will. Definitely is. So the enemy of my enemy is my friend. But does that answer your question, Bart? Bart, are you still there? Well, we seem to have lost you there, but if you want to just quickly hang up your phone and ring back in, that usually seems to solve the problem. Apologies for that. We sometimes have technical difficulties with the caller lines here sometimes. And also, we had another couple of people who wanted to come on via Skype. They were talking about us in the chat room, I think. So we'll hopefully be able to bring you guys up after the break, if that's at all possible. Now, I've been in the center of this kind of world, this new world view, okay, this new world order, if you will, for a number of years. And what is strange to me is that all of those things that I used to enjoy in my life, okay, you know, going to movies and various sorts of things, I actually still really enjoy, okay? Even though I know that they're part of the New World Order brainwashing syndicate style of propaganda and everything like that, I believe that you do have to have two feet in both worlds at all times, because the New World Order world is very, very real, even though it's based on lies, okay? It's still there. And just like with your family and things of that nature, if you forget what commonality you had with your family and you only talk to them about truth or stuff and things of that nature, you're going to wind up alienating them. And so if you stop participating in the system, if you stop going to movies, stop going to restaurants, stop shopping in supermarkets, stop doing everything, stop buying gas, you stop participating in society. Everybody else participates in society, and if you stop, you're going to be a lot less effective at helping society to change, because if you're in the same situation as everybody else, it breeds familiarity with the concepts of which you're discussing. All right, well, we have a different caller in now. Anonymous, you are on the air. Welcome, bro.
You're on the air. We can hear you.
Oh, hello there. This is Andrew from Hamilton.
Andrew, awesome, mate. What's up?
I'm just calling to agree with what you're saying about the war on drugs, how it's false, and I think it's terrible that the actor went to jail at all, because he's a good man. He's not doing anything wrong, and the government should really keep out of people's choices about marijuana.
Yeah. I mean, basic principle is like the Hippocratic Oath, I think, is should apply to government as well as doctors. Do no harm. Okay. And if, and you know, name me a victim. Name me a victim of Dr. Green, the evil cannabis smoking, joint rolling Dr. Green. Show me one of his victims.
Yes, we can't, because as you said before, nobody's ever died of cannabis, so we can't show any victims except the people in jail, and there's thousands and thousands of them.
But you talk to other people about this, though, Andrew, and they're like, well, there's that guy down the street who's not feeling very well. Like, they make up somebody? Like, basically, because they can't actually point to anything real, they make up something?
Exactly. It's like a defense mechanism. It's like, I am a robot. I believe everything the government tells me. And if you find evidence against it, they'll just make stuff up to disprove you.
See, and those type of people, they're very poisonous for your life. And that's why you purge them. Okay, it's kind of like, I don't know, Andrew, have you ever popped a pimple and felt very, very satisfied about it kind of thing? Purge it, you know? That's what getting... That's what getting these toxic individuals out of your life is like, you know. It's just like somebody will insult you on YouTube or something, and you know they're just making stuff up, and they're completely crazy, and they're all in caps and everything like that. Block functions on Facebook and YouTube are a godsend. Block, purge, gone. Oh, yeah.
That's true, but these people just create new accounts, and then you have to block their new accounts, and, you know,
See, then again... it takes them a lot more effort to create a new account and to actually write a comment to you than it is for you to do the one click of block.
Yes,
so you wind up expending a lot less energy to mess with them than they do to mess with you. Okay, and they're essentially bashing their heads against the brick wall. And that's the mentality that they have been following their entire lives. They can't see reality.
No, they definitely can't. But the problem is the laws are just getting tougher and tougher. Like, as I said to you another time I called, in New Zealand they're building private prisons and now they've put in free strike laws. So they're just going to fill up the prisons with, you know, marijuana smokers and, like, people who don't really belong there. And nothing's happening because the people aren't getting healed in prison. Like, their lives are getting ruined. They're going to come out and can't get a good job and they're just going to turn to a life of crime. It's going to be a very wicked thing.
Well, Martin Luther King, I think, has had the best words on this. When injustice becomes law, resistance becomes duty. So, Andrew, it's your duty and mine to not abide by these BS laws. to seek the truth and speak the truth wherever it can be, and to be not concerned about what discrimination we might face as a result of being honest, decent people. Andrew, thank you for your call. We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
Organized crime. Broadcasting live from the Chateau de Rothschild on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. In fact, it's UncleVinnieEastwood.com.
Okay, anyway. We were talking about something on the in the chat room during the break. Truth is social networking. Okay, now I know that there's lots of people who listen to me up and down the country in New Zealand. And when people send me an email through the contact form at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, what I'm thinking I really want to do is have kind of like a truther social network, but it's a Vinnie Eastwood listener truther social network, because every Vinnie Eastwood listener is kind of very similar. Like, you know, they don't take themselves or life too seriously. They like to have a good laugh and everything like that. They're not terribly afraid about being exterminated. They just know it's going to happen someday, and it's all G-Unit. I'm just going to fight until I die, and I've got nothing to lose anyway that they aren't going to take regard. Basically, they're the kind of people who don't care about the stupid idiosyncrasies that society teaches us about that are bad about people. Okay? That's every single listener that I've met is that exact description. Okay, you fit into a box, and that box is labeled cool. Okay, like cool truthers. All right, there's plenty of nuts truthers, there's plenty of obsessive truthers, but I think there's far more cool truthers than those other two groups combined, right? Because obsession and rage, things of that nature, not the most terribly happy people to be around. They don't make you feel any better, and they'll make you wish the New World Order would exterminate you already. You know, that's the kind of thing. So, one part of what my job is, as far as I'm concerned, I make my own jobs. Of course, I see a problem and I solve it. That's called a job. I invent a solution, whatever. It's called entrepreneurship. And what I want to do is if anybody emails me, you know, with a contact form or anything like that, just tell me the city you're in and contact details, email or Facebook or something of that nature, and tell me that you want to meet up with somebody in your area. And if there are anybody on my list, I'll start making a list today, I guess, of other truthers in your area. And trust me, I don't know people in pretty much... pretty much most of the major cities, I think I've heard from people listening to me too from, and there's even people in lots of other small countries that are like, you know, like in Trinidad and Tobago and Jamaica who listen to the show, and there's people in Africa who listen to the show and things of that nature. So what I'd really love to be able to do is do for others what I did for myself. Go out and be able to meet people of like minds that you can be friends with, because I used to feel really alone, because I thought that I was the only one who knew what the heck was going on, and nobody understood me, and so I got really upset about it, I got depressed, I became drug dependent, and things of this nature. This is all before I became an actual truther. And started really, you know, taking responsibility, going out with the camera and all of that kind of stuff. That was the worst time in my life, before becoming a truther and before meeting others of like mind who actually cared about real issues. Okay? I don't want anybody else to live a life like that. Trust me, it's not worth it. Reach out as soon as you can, as effectively as you can, to the right people. And if you don't know the right people, trust me, I do. Okay? It took me years to acquire the social, connections that I currently have. It took me years of work to make friends with all these people, to forge a reputation and things of that nature. okay? And I will freely give that to anybody who asks for it. If you have the gall to come and ask me for a favor, then you deserve to have that favor fulfilled if I can. Okay? I think that's the nature of our world now, is that we are obligated via our experiences to share that knowledge, to share those benefits, to share those resources, provided we don't need them anymore. Okay, and I'm not saying I don't need my friends anymore or anything like that. I'm talking about once you know a few other truthers, you suddenly realize, hey, finding other truthers isn't actually that difficult. Every time I go to a protest and I wear a Vinnie Eastwood Show t-shirt, for example, and people will come up to me and they'll know who I am. I don't know who they are, but they know me. Okay? And they've got a big smile on their face every time. Okay? Because they're happy to meet me. I'm just a regular guy, just doing my thing, you know, exposing scumbaggery and whatnot. And if you're happy to meet me, then you'll most likely be happy to meet other people who think very similarly to me, won't you? That's what you got to do. Reach out every day as well. You know, it's like the more friends you have, the bigger your support network is for any problem in your life. Like, I'm such a friendly guy, and I make real good friends real quickly. As part of one of my gifts in life that I inherited from my father, capable of just making lifelong friends in instance. You know, we've got that energy about us. And it's easy for me. It may be really hard for other people who are a bit withdrawn or anything like that. So, you know, I'll fill in where you leave off. Okay, if you don't know how to approach people for the first time, ask me. Go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com/contact.html. That's thevinnieeastwoodshow.com/contact.html. If you want to send me an email, if you want to meet a truther in your area, it doesn't matter whether you're in the New Zealand or the UK or the United States or any country at all, I'm just going to start adding you. I'm going to make a new inbox of people in particular cities and what have you. So if you send me an email, you just tell me what your city is and that you're interested in talking up. I mean, what your particular interests are, like health or anything like that. I'll add you to my little database and I'll send you an email address of somebody that's in your city who you can go and meet and hang out and have a coffee, have a drink. I mean, have a joint with them for all I care. Just don't sit by yourself anymore. We are much stronger together. We really are. It makes us feel so much more improved and alive when we're around others who think like we do. And it's not like we're sycophantic at all, are we? We're not just reinforcing stuff that we already believe. We're always trying to find out something new. And believe me when I tell you, when you find someone new, it's of great benefit to you. Okay, a lot of my friends, some of them may not be my friends because I like them in particular or anything like that, but because I feel improved by their very presence, by their knowledge, by their skills, by their intelligence, etc. Okay, even if perhaps I don't like them as a person, I still am capable of receiving benefit from their very presence. Right? That's how much I value people. I value people for what I can value them for. And I think that's why it's easy for me to make friends, because I don't override on the negative. I mean, if somebody is overly negative and a abusive scumbag, then by goodness, I ain't going to be friends with you at all. Okay, there's 7 billion people on the planet. All right, what makes you think I want to spend a moment of my time with someone like you? It's not going to happen, mate. Sorry, I've got better things to do, more important things, more fun things, more enlightening things, more enjoyable things. Priorities. And also purging existing friends as well. Not only do you have to go and find new friends in the truth movement who understand where you're, but you also have to stop calling, stop meeting up with, and stop being involved with those other people who you're involved with currently, who don't understand the truth, who don't really care about you, who don't really listen. They don't have a whole lot of value. Trust me, They don't. Once you find better friends, you wonder why you ever hung out with the rest of them. Like, and this has happened to me throughout my life. Like, I think when I was a teenager on Waiheke Island, there was like a group of 14 kids or something that I'd hang out with. Not a single one of them is my friend today, because none of them actually gave a flying frack about me at the end of the day. Okay? They weren't really my friends. We were just hanging out. Okay? Because we wanted to not be alone. Okay? So you've got the option A, be alone, withdraw into yourself, become seedy and angry and everything like that, and start hating the world and hating yourself as a result. Or B, you can say, you know what? I've got the opportunity now to make some new friends, have a happy time, and no longer be a victim of my own stupidity or other people's stupidity, and I'm going to put myself in an environment that reinforces that on a daily basis. That's my decision to make. It's your decision to make. And I would encourage you to make that decision and don't look back and don't regret that decision. Do you think I regret hanging out with people who didn't care about me for a large portion of my life only to find out later on the truth? No. I feel very happy about that because it means that I now know the difference between somebody who's hanging out with me for me and somebody who's hanging out with me for themselves. You've been listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com. If you want to support the work that I'm doing, cruise into the VinnieEastwoodShow.com homepage or just Google Vinnie Eastwood. That's usually the easiest way to find me because I'm The Vinnie Eastwood. And subscribe for $5 a month. It is a pitiful amount. $5 New Zealand a month. I think it's like $3.50 US or like £2 or something in euros. It's a really small amount. And if you have about 200 people, that's what I want. I need 200 people around the world who support me, what I do, and just that. Okay, I'll give you commercial-free archives, and I'll give you my phone number. I'll hang out with you if you want. I'll have a conversation with you for an hour on Skype. I don't care. If you support me, I'll do whatever I can to support you. That's called a reciprocal, proper relationship. We'll see you again sometime.